As discussed by Dr. Swain, perhaps the highlight of this year's San Antonio Symposium was a trio of stunning trials from Europe evaluating neoadjuvant therapy for patients with HER2-positive tumors, and the first study from Germany was presented by Dr. Michael Unsch. I met with Dr. Unsch in San Antonio, and he began our conversation by describing the design of this study.
We randomized 620 patients with either tumors greater than 2 centimeters or inflammatory disease. And all patients had to be HER2 positive, meaning they belong to this 20% group of patients with a very aggressive disease.
Seems like these women had pretty advanced disease. I think I saw that the average tumor size is about 4 centimeters.
Exactly. So the average tumor size in this trial was 4 centimeters, which means that these are not the screen-detected tumors, but we also included patients with 1 centimeter tumors because those patients had also the aggressive behavior of HER2-positive disease. Okay, and after randomization, patients were treated for 24 weeks with a combination of epirubicin cyclophosphamide, which is an anthracycline-based chemotherapy, which is very usual in U.S. also, followed by 4 cycles of docetaxel. And in one arm, patients received, along with the chemotherapy for the whole treatment duration, trastuzumab. And in the other arm, for the whole treatment duration, an oral medication with 1,250 milligrams of lapatinib.
And I guess a question came up in the audience. You said it's used a lot, but, you know, the idea of using trastuzumab and an anthracycline, Buzdar had looked at this at MD Anderson. We've done surveys and people are not sure about doing that right now. Of course, there's a concern about the heart. Did you see anything in terms of ejection fraction?
The total cardiac failure rate in the study was less than 0.5%. And this is an experience which is in line with previous experiences which we had in Europe with the use of epirubicin cyclophosphamide with trastuzumab. We should not confound these results with the pivotal results of Dennis Lehman 10 years ago, in which patients with a combination of Adriamycin and trastuzumab had a quite high rate of cardiac failure, and therefore
that was metastatic disease.
That was metastatic
disease. Had a lot of prior treatments.
Correct. Those patients had a lot of prior treatment, and they were unselected. Now, our patients, in order to receive this treatment in our trial, had to have a left ventricular ejection fraction of more than 55%. So they had to be cardially seen healthy.
So did you repeat the ejection fraction in everybody?
We repeated the ejection fraction. That was one of the premises of the study.
At what point did you do it?
We did it before chemotherapy, every second cycle, at the end of the chemotherapy, and after surgery. In terms of left ventricular ejection fraction drops, we have not seen a significant drop because we had very, very thorough stopping rules in the trial, and none of the patients had to be stopped because of any left ventricular ejection fraction falls.
Could you see any difference in terms of the ejection fraction in the two arms?
To be very honest, there might be a slight trend that the combination of epirubicin cyclophosphamide with trastuzumab gives a slightly higher drop in LVEF, as expected, fraction than with lapatinib. So basically, lapatinib has no cardiac side effects.
And when was the last EF that you do?
We did it 6 months after inclusion of the patient into the trial. So, of course, we have to do it during follow-up repeatedly.
So did you see in most or all patients who had drops in ejection fraction return in 6 months?
If there were patients who had a drop in left ventricular ejection fraction, those patients, the majority of them, if not all, returned back to the initial value after 6 months.
So let's get to the key finding there. I was trying to think. I don't remember seeing trastuzumab and lapatinib compared head-to-head. Had it been done before?
No, it hasn't.
I mean, metastatic, anything?
Yeah. It has not been done before. So this is really the first trial to compare chemo trastuzumab with chemo lapatinib combination.
I got to say, when you popped that slide up there, I took a deep breath. That was really amazing. Can you explain what you saw?
Yeah. So what we have seen basically, according to the NSABP criteria of pathologic complete response, which is very simply no invasive tumor cell in the breast after neoadjuvant therapy. It was 50% in the trastuzumab chemo arm, and it was 35% in the lapatinib chemo arm. So that result is unexpectedly lower than we hypothesized at the beginning of the study. And probably you are going to ask me now what the explanations are going to be.
Okay, what are the explanations?
Yeah.
I guess one was the issue of whether people actually were able to get the lapatinib.
Correct, yes. So this is an intention to treat analysis, which is the most correct analysis. But of course, we have to see behind the curtain. In 23% of the patients in the lapatinib arm, the chemo and the targeted therapy had to be discontinued because of side effects, which was mainly diarrhea grade 3 and higher, compared to 10% in the trastuzumab chemo arm. And to be very honest, during this trial, we learned for the first time in more than 85 breast cancer centers in Germany how to deal and how to cope with the side effects of a combination lapatinib with anthracyclines and lapatinib with docetaxel. Never ever before anthracyclines have been combined with lapatinib. And also we have learned from a run-in phase of 60 patients that firstly with docetaxel and lapatinib, because of febrile neutropenia, we had to add G-CSF to avoid febrile neutropenia. And second, we had to reduce the dose of lapatinib from 1,250 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams in order to have less diarrhea. And third, and I think this is the most important lesson we have learned from the trial, we now talk to the patients when we put them on lapatinib, we tell them which side effects they will expect, they can expect, and we tell them how to deal with the side effects. So, you know, the typical situation, Friday afternoon, if the patient is starting to have diarrhea, she should not wait until Monday to go to the general practitioner or the house doctor. She should really either go straight forward to an emergency room and have some loperamide, or go to the pharmacy and buy some loperamide. This is very important. Or we give the patient a prescription.
At this point, what's your sense in terms of the actual anti-tumor effect of lapatinib versus trastuzumab in general? I think there have been people who speculated, maybe, and maybe it's going to be a moot point because we're going to end up using both. I don't know, but is it your impression that trastuzumab has greater efficacy?
Yeah. You know, that was a big deal of discussion. I think Eric Weiner at the end of the morning session summarized it quite frankly and objectively, saying that this is a first experience, this is a first set of chemo-targeted combinations, which have been presented yesterday, first by me for the German group, second by Jose Barzelga, also who included in the NeoAlto trial a combination of trastuzumab lapatinib, which looks great, and then also the third possible combination of pertuzumab and trastuzumab presented by Luca Gianni. So I would say, and it was very clever from the conference organizers to lump those three presentations together, because they have to be put into a prospect, or it is a concert, and that concert is telling us something about the single instruments and how they play together to fight better the tumor. So this will be, for sure, the future, a multiple targeted therapy.
Eric put up a slide that had your data and the lapatinib versus trastuzumab data in the NeoAlto trial, which also showed greater benefit with trastuzumab, but not as dramatic as in your study, and concluded that the drug has greater efficacy and better tolerability than lapatinib. Do you agree with that?
At least I do not disagree with Eric Weiner. So the first feeling which we have at the moment, that with that specific combination of anthracycline, docetaxel with trastuzumab, there seems to be a slightly higher efficacy in the neoadjuvant setting compared to the combination of anthracycline, taxane, and lapatinib. Since we are going to have a bunch of studies coming up next year, like the NSABP neoadjuvant trial and other trials, I would say let's wait until we have all those results, and maybe we learn a new lesson from these new findings.
Now, you mentioned the NEO-ALTO study kind of mirroring in the neoadjuvant setting what the ALTO trial is evaluating in adjuvant therapy. And there they saw the greatest path CR rate in the arm that got chemo, trastuzumab, lapatinib. Do you think eventually we'll see the same thing in the adjuvant setting?
Now, in NEO-ALTO, we have seen that the dual receptor targeting lapatinib and trastuzumab, so more or less to do the kill from outside of the cell with trastuzumab and also go to the inside of the cell with lapatinib. And this principle has shown in NEO-ALTO an extremely nice synergistic effect. And I wonder, of course, and all of us wonder, if that is going to be true also in that more than 8,000 patient study called ALTO. We have to be very cautious what we are doing. And we have a wording in Germany, I don't know, probably you have it in American too. One single flower doesn't make a spring, okay? So let's wait for additional results before we really can tell doctors to use the dual receptor combination inhibitor, trastuzumab and lapatinib, outside of trials. So please do it in trials.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And of course, you know, the way you do it, you know, we just got back from the ASH meeting where the German study group just in Germany did a phase 3 study proving the bendamustine rituximab was better than CHOP. We couldn't get it done in the entire United States. They did it just in Germany. So there's a culture there that's incredible that you all have developed in terms of pro-trial.
Yeah, may I focus on this point?
Absolutely.
This is my 25th time I'm at the San Antonio meeting, and I have a great appreciation for U.S. health system, or better say, I have it. And also the research which has been done for the last more than 40 years in this country. Now, for the first time yesterday, investigators, principal investigators from large U.S. groups approached me and told me, Michael, congratulations. It's the first time that you are doing trials and we, the Americans, are going to do confirmatory trials. You are so fast. And then we were sitting down with Cliff Hardis, with Earl Burstein, with Eric Weiner, with a lot of people, Edith Perez and so on, and they were telling me, you are overregulated in the U.S. at the moment. This is the feeling I have.
I don't know what the problem is, but we got to solve it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, I want to ask you about a couple of the other things that you all reported. Pertuzumab, I was pretty surprised. It looked pretty positive. There were people with path CRs and just getting pertuzumab and trastuzumab. I did interview Dr. Gianni yesterday. What were your thoughts about that paper?
Yeah. To be very honest, that was a very pioneering work. To treat patients for a certain period, 12 weeks, just with a targeted therapy, without chemotherapy, was really breaking the ice. And to see a path CR rate, which obviously was lower than in combination with chemotherapy, but was higher than any chemotherapy trial for the last 20 years in an unselected patient population.
17%.
Is a tremendous result. So we have to go from there and see what are the best combination, maybe triple combination, you know, trastuzumab, lapatinib, and pertuzumab, or maybe T-DM1, another very interesting player. And maybe we can also answer the duration. Maybe we should treat 24 weeks. Then we might get even a higher response. So, yes, we are at the beginning of a very interesting development.
Would you like to have pertuzumab available outside of study now, or do we need more research?
We really need more research, yes. By the way, we are about to start a large adjuvant trial in Europe.
Which will be?
Trastuzumab and pertuzumab.
Wow. Versus trastuzumab alone, two arms?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Good.
And we come back to the U.S. question.
Okay, a couple other quick things. Your group reported, again, ahead of the NSABP, who's looking at the same issue in the B40 study, chemo and bevacizumab. They haven't reported it. You just did. What did you look at? This was your colleague, Dr. Van Minkowitz,
presenting. So Gunther Van Minkowitz and I, we worked since 20 years together. And the combination of bevacizumab and chemotherapy, unfortunately, because we, of course, all expected to see a signal, was not showing a tremendous increase, or was showing a minimal but not significant 2% increase in the response rate.
PATHCR.
So there is just one subgroup of patients who seem to benefit from the combination of chemotherapy with bevacizumab, which is the triple negative group. So I am very curious to see what our American colleagues are going to find out in NSABP, and of course also the subgroup analysis of the triple negatives. And maybe this is a lesson which we learned now from the neoadjuvant trial, which might be the patients in the adjuvant setting, and those trials are very far advanced, which are going to benefit from the addition of bevacizumab. And I would put a bet that the triple negative study, which is ongoing in the U.S., will show a benefit. But this is, you know, just speculation.
So, of course, everybody's looking for markers, which we don't have up to this point. And I know the NSABP and Soon Pace are going to be looking at all kinds of stuff. I'm sure you're looking at all kinds of stuff. Any speculations or things that you might be interested in? And the things that we've heard out there in the field, we hear about SNPs.
Right for the moment, I cannot tell you this is a signature for trastuzumab resistance or sensitivity. This is a signature for bevacizumab response. But I would say it will take us maybe another 5 years. And we have already very nice results, but we have to confirm them. And in these projects, we really worked together. We got together with the American groups, the European groups, and we lump tumor samples together in order to increase the research benefit.
So when are we going to see this?
2012, 2013.
Why can't we see it like now? I mean, SNPs, isn't that blood or something?
SNPs is blood, yes.
So you have their blood, right?
Yeah, but it's heterogeneous, you know. It's not a signature. You know, I would like to have a blood sample like a tumor marker, which is telling me this patient is going to have a severe hand-foot syndrome from capecitabine. This patient is going to have diarrhea from lapatinib. We are not there, but we are getting there.
What's your take overall on the role of Bev in metastatic disease? Obviously, in the U.S., we have the controversial situation with the FDA.
Well, we have bevacizumab available in an approved setting, which is in patients who have first-line metastatic disease, and instead of treating them with a taxane alone, we can treat them with taxane.
Is that what you do?
Bevacizumab. I don't do it always. I look, you know, the patient's condition, the tumor dynamics, the symptoms of the patient. But if I have a very strong pressure to get a response in the patient, then I use it in combination with bevacizumab.
Final question. I know that Dr. Van Meekhoven was the first author, so I'm guessing you were involved with this, about the work that looked at IHC staining a PARP.
Yes.
That was wild. I really like that. Can you explain that?
Yeah. I think the word wild is the appropriate word. So let's put it this way. Yes, we have seen a signal. The data, by the way, have been accepted for publication.
Can you just go through what you actually looked at?
Well, we just looked to immunohistochemical PARP staining in an unselected population from which we had samples before neoadjuvant therapy from previous studies.
So it's from your neoadjuvant bank, so to speak.
Yes, from our neoadjuvant bank, correct. Now, to be very honest, that is just a signal from which we don't know. Does it have any biological meaning or not?
Secondly,
is the PARP IHC expression going to be linked to a PARP inhibitor response? And my answer is big question mark.
I was asking Alan Ashworth last night what he thought, and he also had at least a big question mark. But just to get it in context, my understanding was that in the analysis, what you saw was, I think it was it the nuclear PARP that was predictive of response to chemo or PATHCR or cytoplasmic?
Cytoplasmic.
Okay, so you reported that. First time anybody's looked at
it,
right?
Yeah.
So all I was going to say is, other people need to look at it. But I just thought it was a really cool idea.
But let me ask you a last question, Neil, or maybe we can focus on a very strange topic. Can you imagine that we have, I'm not going to say any names, that we have PARP inhibitors out there who do not inhibit PARP, but they work in patients?
Yeah, well, that's the other question, is how these agents actually are working.
Yeah.
But at least there's excitement, particularly in triple negative, which we haven't had too much to get excited about lately, or ever, maybe.
Yeah.
Are you doing any more on that right now?
Well, we are starting in Germany a neoadjuvant PARP inhibitor study. And along with that study, we also measure the PARP.
Which agent?
Iniperib.
Hmm. Interesting. I think the NSABP is doing that too, right?
Well, you know, this is what happens at the moment between this side and that side of the ocean. It's a head-to-head run.
It's head-to-head, yeah. And I think they've got like four arms. How many arms do you have?
We have two arms.
Two arms. So the race is on, huh?
The race is on.
But they got four versus two, so yeah. They need more patients.
They need more patients.
Listen, every patient who's eligible for this study would love to be on it. We got to find a way to get them on.
Absolutely.
All of them.
Yeah.